Investigators, this is a lesser-known murder case out of Baltimore, Maryland, where a young woman was sitting in her car at a discount department store parking lot less than a mile from her house when a man pulled up behind her in a white BMW. He shot her and killed her.
I mean, I'm like crumbling a lot inside and have a smile on my face, but I, you know, it's hard.
That's Jenny Carreri. She has made it her mission in life to catch her sister's killer. She reached out to me a few weeks ago about the case through my website, truecrimedeadline.com. She's on the East Coast, and as you know, I'm in Hollywood. So we sat down for a Skype interview, and we spoke on the record for nearly an hour. And details in this case are haunting.
I think it's possible that people at the bar know something. I mean, somebody's got to know something, you know? I mean, it just... There's just too many odd things that, you know, and then I go back to the whole thing where hundreds of people have said to me, the police are hiding something, they've messed something up, they know something.
There are a lot of shocking details in this case, including evidence never tested and witnesses never interviewed. But why? Before we dive into the case, I want to let you know that the content is for mature audiences, and it still might not be for everyone. I also want to remind you that we have a special shout out for everyone who wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts. It really helps independent podcasts like this one get noticed. So please subscribe, rate 5-star, and write a review. After the episode, I also want to share with you a couple true crime podcasts I think that you're going to like. More on that after the case. The Murder of Jody LaCorno. Investigators, you're on Deadline.
From the Hollywood Hills to your ear holes, this is True Crime Deadline, a podcast discussing cold cases, murder mysteries, and completely random thoughts. Now, here's your host, a man who stands in front of crime scene tape and talks on the TV box for a living, Mr. Mystery himself, Matt Johnson.
And thank you for joining me for this week's episode, episode 12, and that takes us to Baltimore, Maryland, an old colonial city along the east coast of New England, America, known as an import seaport for settlers, where the Star-Spangled Banner was actually written, our national anthem. There's major sports teams there, including the Ravens and the Orioles, and they have several major universities in that area, including Howard, University of Maryland, Johns Hopkins, and Towson University, where 23-year-old Jody LaCorno was a student in 1996. Jody was the daughter of John and Linda LaCorno. Her dad was retired military and an assistant state's attorney. She had three sisters, including her identical twin, Jenny.
She was like an animal lover, and she loved, you know, she was young, so the things that she loved in her 20s, she loved shopping and Christmas. I mean, she just loved all, you know, her being with her friends, and just such a sweet, I mean, kind, would do anything for anybody.
Jenny and Jody were inseparable. They did everything together, and they also shared the same demons, both struggling with an alcohol addiction throughout their teen years and early 20s, which landed them in separate rehabs. In 1996, Jody had started drinking again. She was living with her boyfriend, who was also a heavy drinker, but he only liked her to drink at home with him. So on March 2nd, 1996, the two got into a huge fight. Jody had gone out to the local bar, Mount Washington Tavern, without him, and he kicked her out of the house the next morning. So she went to work, and after, she had nowhere to go. So she went back to the bar. It was snowing that night. She closed the bar down and agreed to take a bar employee home. She gave him a ride. And afterwards, instead of going home, she drove to a parking lot and had a few more beers alone. As she sat there in her white Honda Civic, a man walked up. Her window was down. Witnesses say that they talked for a bit. Then he walked back to his white BMW. He pulled out a gun and he shot her in the back through the rear passenger window. What happened next is both shocking and simply evil. There's no other way to put it. The case still unsolved, and her sister Jenny is asking for your help.
Tell me about you and your twin sister.
You always have your best friend around. I mean, we were identical. So my mother, you know, when since we were born, dressed us alike, and we were always together nonstop. We always had the same room, same friends, same classes, all the way up through high school.
You know what? It must be really hard being an identical twin and not to have a piece of you still here and on the planet with you.
It's very hard. It's, you know, I was numb for so long. I went into shock, and when I heard the words, Jody's dead, and I had tried to call her that Saturday morning. She died on my parents' wedding anniversary. She was shot on their anniversary, and they called my fiance because they didn't want to tell me, and he came in and told me, and I just, for years, I mean, I was just numb, shock.
Tell me about what was going on the day before the murder.
Okay, so Jody had gone to work that day and then went to the tavern that night. And that's what upset her boyfriend, Steve, because she called him. They had a payphone at the tavern, and she called him from there. And he did not like her to go to the bar, and he wanted her to, he liked to be home and drink. And she liked to go be at this bar and drink. So that's what started the fight. And so when he found out she was at the bar, she came home that night. And then the next morning is when they had the fight. And he told her not to come home. He said, go, you know, maybe go to your parents' house for the weekend. They were about 45 minutes away. So it was just very odd, the whole, I mean, I don't know about the you know, she went to work that day. But for her, she had lots of people that loved her. She would have had a place to go. She wouldn't have gone that night to go sit in a dark parking lot and talk to a stranger. She wouldn't have, she drove the janitor home from the bar. I mean, she would have done anything for anybody. But even in the middle of the night, I it's hard for me to see her driving somebody that like that home that I by herself, and it was snowing, for her to drive in the snow. She wouldn't have done that either. So everything was really out of character for her that night.
What do we know that happened that night?
She stayed at the bar till almost close, and was asked by one of the workers there to drive the janitor home. And she drove him home and then went to a liquor store and bought a 6-pack of beer. And went and sat, this is all within about 5 miles of her house, and then went and sat in a dark parking lot right next to her house. I mean, literally like a minute from her house, and sat there. And there were 6 witnesses that night. So she's sitting in this parking lot. It's called the Cow Door. It was an old department store. So what witnesses say is that an African-American male approached her vehicle, and her window was rolled down, which it was cold and snowy. So the detectives have said they think maybe she knew this person. But I apologize. Prior to that, she had made a couple of phone calls sitting in the lot. And she had called back to the bar and talked, I believe it was to 2 different people there. One was to the manager. And what I found out actually just in the last couple of years is that he had later on committed suicide. I mean, it was just odd that I had never known that. Yeah, that he had committed suicide. And then she talked to, I believe it was one of the bartenders, but there's 3 different theories that they are 3 different thoughts that I've heard, is that she was looking for a party. She was looking for the owner. There was rumors that she kind of had a crush on the owner. And others said that she was looking for drugs. So there was no drugs in her system. Her alcohol level was high. But she, you know, there was no drugs. So I don't rule out anything. I don't rule that, you know, I within my heart don't believe she was doing drugs at the time, because I think we would have known.
What happens after she's shot?
There was people crazy. I mean, out and about. And so she drove across and he followed her. He shot her from behind. So the bullet went through the back of the car into the seat and into her spine. So she got into the shopping center and circle the lot. He sat at the entrance and just watched her. And then once she stopped, I think she hit a curb. I mean, her car stopped and the witnesses saw him come up to her and her window was down and reached in over her body and put her car in park and took something out of her car. They always say he took something out of her car, but she had one of those old phones from the 90s that my parents got her. It was called like a box phone or something. So they say, they're like, we can't tell you what was taken out of the car, but her purse and phone were gone. So if she had a purse, I don't know if she was carrying a credit card. I don't know, but the phone was gone. But he did all this in front of these people. And then they tell us the cameras were down in the Giant that night. So they couldn't get video from that, from where she was and where she ended up. But he was very slow, not in a hurry, just got the stuff and just slowly drove out of the parking lot, made a right on York Road and then a right on Walker Avenue, the next street. I mean, if it was a robbery, I don't understand why he wouldn't just have gone up to her window and said, give me your purse, why there would have been a conversation. Then she was shot. Then he followed her. Do you see what I'm saying? It's very odd.
Yeah, the whole part about him following her is just so evil. And then she's dying. Did she die on the scene there?
Yeah.
So he's like moving around her body and doing whatever he's doing. It's just evil.
Yes, yes. Very evil, very evil. It's the whole thing is bizarre. I mean, you know, you think it's a robbery, but then it's not a normal robbery. You know what I mean? And she's not the kind, you know, people say, oh, it was a drug deal. Maybe she stole drugs from him. I mean, that just wasn't her personality. You know what I mean? Like if she was buying drugs, if it was a drug thing, I just don't see her. The way she was so afraid of everything, snatching drugs and trying to run away or something. I mean, you know, people have brought up that. That's just my opinion. I don't know. I mean, she was so afraid. I mean, but like I said, everything was so odd that night from her just sitting there in that dark parking lot.
Do you think that she knew this person?
If she didn't know it, I think she knew somebody that knew the person, like somebody maybe sent the person there. You know, she called the bar, she called another friend and talked to the friend's boyfriend in the parking lot, which was just a whole nother odd thing.
What do you think was going through her mind right then? Do you think that she just needed some sort of comfort or someone to talk to her? Why is she doing this stuff?
I don't know. I mean, what I think is maybe she was there to meet somebody or waiting for somebody. Cause I think she would have been afraid to be sitting there in that parking lot. I mean, that's why I think maybe she was. Maybe she was planning on going to meet somebody. But and if she and her boyfriend were in this fight, he didn't seem to me like this person where she would have been afraid to just kind of sneak in the house and sleep on the couch or something. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I was young then, but now that I've been in a relationship, do you know what I mean? Like, why not go sit in front of her house? Why just go to this dark parking lot? Like it just doesn't add up. That's why I think was she.
Right. Because, you know, she could have just sat and drank beer in front of the parking lot of her house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of like down the street. Do you think that the boyfriend had something to do with it? Have you ever suspected him or anyone from the bar?
No, I don't suspect the boyfriend. Unfortunately, it doesn't look good on him because he was home sleeping that night. I mean, the whole situation doesn't. And then they had a fight.
What was her relationship like with this boyfriend? How long were they together?
So he was a lot older than her and they had a major thing in common and that was drinking. And he was a really nice guy. He was a teacher. He was 14 years older than her. And they lived together pretty quickly. Basically, they just drank a lot. And that wasn't good. I mean, they had, however you can have a relationship in that way, you know what I mean? She was waitressing for a while and taking classes. She was about to graduate Towson, and that's where they were, right down the street from the school.
How was she doing? What was her mindset, you know, before the murder?
She was really afraid of everything, and she was afraid to live in Baltimore. She used to say she was afraid she was going to get shot in Baltimore. And so, yeah, which is crazy. And I mean, she was afraid of her closet. She was afraid of everything. So she lived in a lot of fear. And so the drinking, you know, and like I said, we had experimented with drugs in high school, but alcohol was mainly what we were addicted to. And she, like I said, she had tried in the last year or so, attempted to get help, but she just really struggled with it. It was just, it was awful.
So what theories do you have right now?
Right now, I'm trying to stay positive about the police, but I get more frustrated with, I feel for some reason that they don't want to solve our case. So what theory is, something's not right. You know, my mother feels that way. My mother's almost 80. She's very upset as I am. And she feels very strongly. I mean, she's not one to come out in the media and talk, or, but she feels 100%. And I, like I said, anybody that I've done interviews with, people just say something's not right. I guess you said, what are my theories? I guess it's my frustration with the police right now, knowing what I know and knowing that our case doesn't move forward. It just only leads me to believe, what are you waiting for? Why is her case not solved?
You do face a battle with police. Talk to me about that. They don't like you talking about it.
There's been the same detective on the case since day one. And the behavior with him, just, you know, a little bit of disrespect and inappropriate behavior and contradictions. And just, I really got as much as I could from him for the longest time about suspects, persons of interest. I mean, everything I could. And for, you know, he'd say, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then nothing was being done. And I was getting so frustrated just seeing things. I started to see some people that they said they interviewed that they hadn't, people that should have been interviewed. I mean, I met a reporter from Baltimore, a cameraman from WBAL in Baltimore that was with one of my interviews. And he said he sat and talked to Jody in the bar that night for 15 minutes before she died. Before she was shot, you know, before she left.
What did they talk about?
I can't remember, honestly. And I don't know that he could remember. They were just chatting at the bar. But it was a local place where Jody would go and felt comfortable. And it was media night, where the media people would go once a week. I mean, it was a small Mount Washington Tavern. Everybody kind of knew everybody. She knew the bar. She was friendly with the bartender. I mean, she liked to go there. So the fact that he wasn't interviewed, and it just was odd to me that they didn't find out who she was speaking with. I mean, whether he knew something or not, it just was so many, there's been so many examples of that. You know, there was a main suspect, person of interest, you know, when I'd asked the detective a couple of years ago about speaking with him, and his response is, I can't recall if I spoke to him, his name, you know, said his name. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on. And so it just got so maddening. And they tell me her case is sitting in a closet. And this was years ago, before my lawsuit to get the records. Her case should be solved. I mean, there's a lot of information. And I've done stuff. I've been communicating with a prisoner. I've gone to talk to people. I've done a lot of things that aren't safe. You know, I got to the point from being this anxious basket case to just this person that I just got so on this mission that I just got fed up, and I just was doing whatever I could. I mean, it's definitely, it took a toll on me.
What avenues have been explored in the case, in the investigation over the years, and where have they led?
Okay, so there's basically been kind of two, three people of interest that they've kind of been focused on over the years. Have they all been thoroughly investigated? I don't believe so, because two of them I've done a lot of looking into and reaching out I've gotten in touch with one of them, and one of the other one, his ex-wife. And I mean, so I've reached out to family members. So I've found out things that haven't been investigated. So why are they not moving forward? You know, so the one of the persons of interest is in prison, and he's the one that I've been writing to and talking to. And
what is he in prison for?
Attempted murder for a female.
Does he match the description?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was it similar circumstances?
No, this was one where there was drugs involved. They were doing drugs.
What's your interaction with him been like? Is he forthcoming? What's going on?
Says that he doesn't know her, doesn't know Jody. I reached out to him just out of desperation because I was frustrated with the police because I had received a lot of information about him and decided that I was just going to start. I said, bring me in there to talk to him. And they said, well, why would he want to talk to you? And I was like, well, F you. So I went out and started writing them, you know. And so I got responses, and just, it's a very bizarre communication. I opened up a PO box. I mean, I know it's just not a good situation. And my husband found out, and he was very upset. And, you know, what are you doing? You're putting us in danger. Reached out to some of his family members, went to try to find one of them. I've done a lot. Yeah.
Do you think that he could be the suspect?
I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I do. How? I don't know. How they're connected.
What makes you believe that he's the suspect? Did he write something about the case that maybe people don't know? Or
from what I've been told. A lot that I've been told.
What's next? I know that you did the billboard campaign, and it kind of reminded me of that movie that won all those awards. So is that what inspired you? And what's next for you?
Absolutely. That movie was a big inspiration. And I was so, oh my gosh, inspired by Frances McDormand and her quote I love, the more you keep the case in the public eye, the better chances are you're getting it solved. And the billboards just, I think I've done 8, and they have just really brought her story to all over the world. I mean, I just did a French documentary. I mean, people like everywhere are fascinated by it. I'm going to do another one in the fall. The problem is coming up with the money to do one. I want to do a plea to the killer. So I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but it's something that I was thinking about doing.
What is your message to her killer?
Come forward. I mean, I want to sit down with the killer. And I don't know what I'd say, but I want to sit down with the killer, or, you know, anybody that has any information or knows anything. I mean, I just would beg and plead. I mean, this has literally put me through hell. I mean, literally hell, you know, myself, my family, everything we've gone through. I mean, it's taken a major toll on my marriage. Just my whole involvement with, you know, just taking me away and the mentally, physically, you know, the depression, just not wanting to live. I mean, there's been a lot of days like that where I just, it's really hard. It's really hard. And you say what drives me, probably my kids. Now I have 3 kids and they keep me going.
Do you talk to your sister?
I do. And a lot. You know, and I hate to bring into the whole God thing because I'm not this real religious person, but I do believe in God, and you know, I pray a lot, and I talk to her. I like to go to her grave. I couldn't go for the longest time, but I like to just go sit, and I talk to her in the morning. I talk to her when I'm afraid. Just talk to her anytime, you know, when I'm having a hard time, I just get comfort feeling like she's with me. I know this sounds crazy, but she loved bunny rabbits. And so when I see bunnies, it's just a comforting thing. You know, I actually had a friend from high school that just sent me a picture of a bunny today. She was really close with Jody, that she just saw a bunny in her yard. She's like, oh my gosh. So it's just something that, you know, I mean, there's been like once or twice where I've just been just at a really bad place and walked outside and just saw like a bunny in my front yard. And I'm like, okay, you know, like, okay, all right, it's okay. And, just, you know, it's like, you gotta have something to help you have comfort and peace. And
what drives you today?
I don't know, because I mean, there's definitely times where I can't take, like, it's very painful, and the battle that I've had with the police. I mean, there's times where I just want to just exit off planet Earth, and I've had a lot of low times. I don't know what drives me. What helps me is the people, like you, people that help, you know, come out. I mean, definitely my family and my friends are very supportive. But having people share her story and it gives me hope. I mean, I've done a lot over the years, and that just kind of keeps me going.
It's been a tough road. So
yeah,
I really do hope that you keep on.
I really
hope that that leads to exposure and answers.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm never giving up hope. I just keep trying to get her story out there. I mean, I just keep going after people like, please, please share her story. So I'm very grateful that you, I mean, it's awesome.
Today, police consider the case cold, and Jody's family now offering a $100,000 cash reward for information leading to the killer's arrest for justice. The suspect is described as African American, between 5'10 and 6'2, 200 to 220 pounds, 20 to 30 years old back then, and a stocky build. He was wearing a green army camouflage type jacket and driving a white BMW. Anyone with information in the case is encouraged to call Baltimore County Police Department or Metro Crime Stoppers at 1-866-7-LOCKUP, and you can remain anonymous. Now, I'm going to post video and pictures of the case on my website, truecrimedeadline.com, and on Twitter and Facebook under the same name. Now, remember, after this episode, I'm going to have a shout out to those who wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts, and I'll share with you a couple podcasts I think that you're going to like. But I also want to leave you with this thought. During the interview, when Jenny and I started talking about the case and about her sister, I asked her, what drives you? And you heard the answer to that. And then I asked, do you talk to your sister? She said yes. She said that she's not overly religious, but she does believe in God. And when she's at her lowest point, and when she feels like she hits a wall with the investigation, she sometimes feels like she gets a sign from her sister. And that's exactly when this happened.
Wait, a TV just popped on. That's weird. I didn't even touch it. I'm going to turn it off. Hold on one second.
Now, we can't explain it, but it could be a timer. Maybe it was an electrical short circuit. I don't know. But what we do know is someone out there knows something. So let's please share this episode and get more people talking about this case. Investigators, until next time.
Thank you for investigating True Crime Deadline with Matt Johnson. For more information about the podcast, visit truecrimedeadline.com. And remember, all tips regarding a case should go to the police. Until next time.
Mr. Gatsby, want a cookie? Good boy.
Now a podcast shout out to investigators who wrote reviews on Apple Podcasts. Alinka says, great, love the podcast, exclamation mark. Kate Marie says, great show, loves my reporting and diversity of cases. I do try, and these are cases that are pretty haunting. JKL5876 says, very good, likes the narration and the shorter episodes. And you know what? I have to agree. I really like podcasts that have shorter episodes because I'm usually busy doing a few things and I want to be able to hear the end and I don't want to skip anything. So I agree. Luz Ma says, one of the best, stumbled on the pod and has been binging ever since. I thank you. And I also thank Bruce Fluffy Toes, great name, says, fantastic, excellent, informative, and well-researched. You know what? This is pretty much my personal journal on the cases that I've covered, so I really appreciate that. And Cool says, love, love the podcast and binged all episodes. Now, again, writing reviews really helps independent podcasts like this one get noticed because we are up against networks and studios and TV channels. So thank you very, very much. It's easy. It's free. Just hit 5-star subscribe, tell a friend, write a review, and tell me your real name if you are a podcast host, because I want to give you a proper shout out. Now, I'm excited to also tell you about 2 true crime podcasts I just found. One is called Corpus Delicti, and the other, Bad in the Boondocks. And let's start with that one. It's a father-son duo who tells crimes from way back in the sticks. My dad is a big fan of theirs. Take a listen.
Hey, I'm Stan. And I'm Drew, and we are your hosts of Bad in the Boondocks. Bad in the Boondocks is a fresh take on true crime podcasts. We are a father and son team from way back in the sticks of South Carolina.
Yeah, in a town of less than 500. And we have a shared passion for all things true crime. So, every Saturday, we get together and swap stories about a true crime event.
We try and find the most twisted and vile losers of our human race. Now, you won't hear a lot of endless banter on Bad in the Boondocks.
But what you will hear is all the unedited facts on the cases we choose, no matter how gory or troublesome they are. And you'll hear it all with a unique Southern flair.
And along the way, you'll hear just the right amount of discussion and jokes to keep you and us from completely losing your mind. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms like iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Himalaya, and CastBox, or just go to badintheboondocks.com and download all of our episodes there.
So, come on down to the Boondocks and get your redneck on with us. We promise, you'll have a good time.
Now, you can find them and us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you binge. Now, the second podcast is called Corpus Delicti, true crime with a touch of lightheartedness and a dash of Southern charm. Check it out.
Hey, everyone, it's Jen.
And this is Lindsay.
And we're the hosts of Corpus Delicti.
If true crime is your thing, it's ours too. And we do it with a dash of lightheartedness and a hint of Southern charm.
We cover both well and lesser known cases and have also started a series where we spend weeks at a time covering cases from certain topics.
Ever wondered why there are so many cruise ship deaths and disappearances? How about how crime has affected history? What about lesser known serial killers? Corpus Delicti has you covered.
Episodes are released every Tuesday and can be found on your favorite podcatcher.
That's CORPUS DELICTI. Hope you'll join us soon.